What it is, what it do, welcome to the One Fall Podcast on We Talk and Stick Boy. Joshua Adam William Arbuthnot with Joel and Mo, and it has been an interesting 2018 where the indies took over, where the greatest thing about WWE was its women and its developmental territory, and where 2019 looked like a bigger and brighter future, but not for WWE. This is the year in review episode. Thanks, everyone, for joining us. Joe, Mo, it's good to have you on, what is one of my favorite podcasts of the year.
I hate to give you a compliment, but I think you just perfectly summed up this year.
That's right.
Like, once in a while, everything's okay. That's an excellent summary of what made this year this year.
All right, so we peaked in the first minute of the pod. I'm going to stop the record, and we'll be back for next year.
I hate to put Japan as an independent, but unfortunately right now that's what we're quantifying it as. But this year was a tremendous year, one of the best years as far as in the ring. And, well, the women definitely did a tremendous job, and we'll get to them in a second. The men obviously stood out last year, and the last 2 years, it has been a clean sweep since we've started it. The first year we did this, it was a clean sweep for AJ Styles. The following year, last year, it was a clean sweep for Okada. Will we have a clean sweep this year is the question. Mo, we're going to start with you for the Wrestler of the Year male.
We're starting with the big one. That's good. I guess because of course we have some best ofs, and then afterwards I guess there's also some worst ofs. Are we going to end with the worst ofs?
That's not the best one. That's not the best one. You're a complainer. You enjoy that part, but the best part is talking about the bright spots of wrestling. This is my favorite spot, is the talking about the highlights instead of the lowlights, because there are so many lowlights.
Mo, who's your Wrestler of the Year?
All right, well, let's get this one out of the way. I think this is a slam dunk. Actually, I don't think it is. You know, this is a funny. You talk about, you know, we're not going to, I'm sure, agree on this one. Because this year, I don't think anybody stood head and shoulders in the same way that they have in the last couple of years. You can make an argument for a lot of people. So I'm going with the guy who I just think is consistent, and I'll be doing the same for the woman. Just the most consistent, bell-to-bell, year-in, year-out, match after match 2018 performer, and he doesn't get enough credit. So I'm going to go with a guy who just had so many great matches, but is not somebody you would build a company around, and that's Ishii.
Wow. I didn't see that one coming, but Ishii definitely, from what I've been able to see in him in Japan, definitely worthy of that compliment.
He's one of the very best. He's one of the very best in the business today, maybe one of the very best you're ever going to see. He's just, I can list off matches that were spectacular, like at least 10 spectacular matches, at least 10, probably easily more than that. Actually, he probably had six, you know, near 5-star matches in the G1 alone. So he's just awesome. And yeah, big fan.
Joel,
mine will be in Japan as well. It won't be Ishii. That's a great call. I really, anytime Ishii wrestles, it's always a good time. My pick, he is 42 years old. He will never leave Japan. And at this point, he's held together by duct tape and hairspray. It's Tanahashi. The year that he had, at the age that he is impressive. And this will probably be the last time the guy headlines the Tokyo Dome, though I wouldn't be shocked if he did it one more time at some point. He just had a great year, and in a year when you kind of thought, okay, well, this will really be the emergence of Kenny Omega as a key staple for Japan, that really hasn't happened. He's won, he beat Okada, but it's never felt like it hit that next gear with his title reign. Part of it was his lack of being there at different points, but Tanahashi's constantly there. You talk about this end of the year guy that's been there from January 1st all the way to December 31st, and Tanahashi fits that bill perfectly. He will wrestle, he will have a torn bicep, his arm will be broken, his leg will be shattered, and he'd still go out there and wrestle, and still probably put on a quality 4-star match.
Solid pick by one of the best in Japan. This was a tough choice. There's a lot of great picks, and you guys obviously set the bar with some tremendous talented wrestlers. For me, unfortunately, I didn't get to see as much Japan as I did this year, although there were some guys in consideration from Japan that I did get to see that definitely stood out. But much like Mo did with Ishii, I went with consistency, that when they were in the ring, they just brought fire. They just brought electricity. And my wrestler of the year is Johnny Gargano. I just thought every time Gargano stepped in that ring, you were guaranteed an electrifying show with the emotion that he brings. Unlike most wrestlers, he just brings an emotion to him, whether you're rooting for him as an ultimate babyface or now rooting against him to some degree as this twisted heel. When Johnny Gargano gets in the ring, it's definitely something that is must-see. And that made him, to me, this year, one of the most entertaining wrestlers to see, from the match with Aleister Black to all the way to the start of the year, the tremendous one with Almas, to obviously the ones with Ciampa. He lit up the NXT universe this year.
They're both excellent picks, guys. Both guys I considered strongly. I felt Gargano had a little bit of a dip kind of in the summer months.
Yeah.
So that's why I didn't go with him, but he's strongly considered, and Tanahashi's name will come up again, I guarantee it, during this podcast.
Yeah, so great picks, guys. Next is the female wrestler of the year, and it's been very consistent for Mo to pick Asuka the last few years, and last year it was a clean sweep for us all to pick Asuka. Joel, I'm going to let you start off this one.
I'm going to go with a pick. I think it's an easy pick for me. Just the woman that stood out and was constantly a top performer, and it's not the man, though if she had ran with this gimmick for the whole year, then she'd absolutely be there. But my pick is Charlotte. We talked about consistency. Charlotte has been there all the way through, except for, I think, a month and a half she was gone. Her match with Asuka was probably the match of the night for WrestleMania, and that doesn't speak much for WWE, but it still speaks volumes when you have the best match on a WrestleMania card. She's had great matches from the Evolution match to the TLC match that was last Sunday. She just constantly goes out there, and she constantly proves that she's the top athlete for the women's division for Raw, for WWE.
Well, Joel, that's a great pick with Flair. I'm going to go and then let you finish off on this one, Mo. Well, I agree. Flair was definitely someone I considered. Obviously, Asuka's in there, and there were so many women that were in the Mae Young. I'm going with Becky Lynch. I just thought she took what women's wrestling was this year, and she raised it to another bar and got it to a recognition to not only be the most important woman in the company, to be the most important wrestler in the entire company right now. That has propelled her over Charlotte for a spot that was going to be a Charlotte main event spot at WrestleMania, and now it's Becky's spot to have against Ronda Rousey. Ronda obviously definitely conserved consideration for this as well, but Becky just set a different mark as far as what we expect from a woman wrestler, and she took herself from being a great star to the superstar right now in the company. Mo?
Yeah, and, I would give it to her for the last 6 months, but if we're talking the entire calendar year, then I am actually in alignment with the other co-hosts on this show. Joel, I absolutely agree. When you're looking at somebody who had the most opportunity to fail and the most opportunity to succeed and had the most good matches, high-profile matches as a woman on the WWE roster, it was Charlotte. So she is my pick as well. Asuka is the best worker, which is why I picked her the last 2 years, but Charlotte's deserving this year.
Yeah, I mean, Charlotte definitely deserves it. I just had to put it, Becky, such a short sample size. It really starts at SummerSlam, like you guys were saying, but I just thought what she did in that short time really skyrocketed and changed things up. Best tag team of the year. Last year, me and Mo both went with the Usos, and Joel went with the Young Bucks. Mo, who do you got?
As much as I would like to give it to the Undisputed Era team of Kyle O'Reilly and now the name is Roderick Strong. Thank you. The name almost escapes me there. As much as I'd like to, because they were great, anything other than the Young Bucks for not just what they do in ring, but for their continuing impact on the industry and the transformation of it, I think would be a mistake. So they're my pick.
Young Bucks. Joel?
It's the same thing. the fact that we have All In, and we'll be talking about All In a little bit here, and just where everything's heading in 2019, regardless of what the lack of feuds that they had, and they had a couple feuds this year, but they've made a statement that I don't think any other tag team in wrestling has in the last maybe 20 years. I don't know. I think Mo would be able to give better information on that. But I just look at the Young Bucks. They are someone, along with Cody, the Elite as a whole are people that you can build a whole company around. And for a tag team to be able to be one of the centerpieces for your wrestling promotion, and they're a big part of Ring of Honor. And now that they're gone, it's going to be very interesting to see how Ring of Honor handles losing the Young Bucks, because you could always bet on a good Young Bucks match, whether it's a ladder match or whoever they were wrestling, the Briscoes. There are a few other tag teams in Ring of Honor, but they have revolutionized. They very very well could have revolutionized the business with what they're doing in 2019.
So the last 2 years we've done this, you guys have both picked the Bucks, and I've been the outlander that has not picked them. I picked the Revival the first year. Last year, I guess Mo didn't add the Usos last year, but I've always been the one that's not picked the Young Bucks. But much like with Mo, I really wanted to pick the Undisputed, because I thought as far as the tag team, they were the best tag team this year. But the impact that was made on the industry and going into next year, it's just too strong. And they had one of the best matches this year against the Golden Elite. Whenever they had a great match at Final Battle just a few days ago, and countless other ones that were in there. To me, it's just for everything that they have accomplished. And, you know, what they did it All in such a short time and getting out of there too deserves a little bit of credit. So it's the Young Bucks.
Yeah, they're you know, in the ring, I think you could definitely argue Undisputed Era. But as far as... I think they are the most important tag team, the most influential tag team since the Road Warriors and the Rock and Roll Express.
Yeah.
Probably so in 35, you know, years or so. So that's significant.
Next, best in the microphone. Last year, I went with The Miz. Joel went with Paul Heyman, and Mo went with Paul Heyman. Joel, who are you going with this year?
I'm going to go with, he didn't win any feuds, but damn it, he's entertaining on the mic, and it's Samoa Joe. There were several points that have now become jokes within the wrestling community, from Wendy to his promos on Hardy now. I just think this is a guy that, you know, regardless of how the feuds have turned out for him, he has constantly delivered it on the mic, and that's why I give it to Samoa Joe. I'd like to see him progress forward and do more and possibly win a championship, but on the microphone, he's deadly.
I'm going to go in this one. I'm going to go with Becky Lynch. I just thought whenever she got a chance to tuck the microphone, she was what she kind of said she was. She was straight fire. They tried to push her and make her a heel as much as you can. And when she was supposed to be a heel, you look at the promo she had with Edge, she tried to make it work. When she was going against Ronda, she went that way. Whatever way they wanted her to go, she made it work the best that she could, despite overwhelming support for her to be a face. But when they wanted her to be a heel, she did the best she could to try to be a heel. And this doesn't just go from on the microphone too, it goes from on social media, the way that she's been able to vocalize things in interviews like with Ariel Helwani. She has just dominated that medium this year for me, so it's Becky Lynch. Mo?
Yep, great picks. You know, two people definitely worth considering, and Daniel Bryan is probably the other one who all the three of them elevate the material that is given to them. But to me, this was a slam dunk, and this one truly was a slam dunk. I had no problem picking Juice Robinson.
Okay, nice.
You know, I mean, when I see promos that remind me of old time, profanity ridden, I'll admit, but old time babyface promos, and just such a natural, great babyface. Like, he's just awesome. You know, his promo when he talked about with his broken hand and Jay White, probably the best promo of the year, you know, and what Jay White had done to the hand. So I think he definitely is underrated. People don't talk about it enough because it is over there. And I also love the fact that it's not scripted. It is the guys having some creative output.
I'd like to also nominate, he didn't win, but I also liked Zack Sabre Jr.'s promos as well. Especially when he won the New Japan Cup and progressed forward to face Okada. I really enjoyed his work there.
Yeah, he had quite a run. Best announcer. Last year, I went with Don Callis. Joel went with Kevin Kelly. And Mo with Kevin Kelly. Mo, who do you got this year?
It's not even close. I think Kevin Kelly is so far ahead of everybody. It's ridiculous. He worked with so many different people, and other than the disaster that was Lanny Poffo, he elevated every single person into being excellent. He just, the last one he did here with working with Excalibur, just recently Excalibur's calling all the moves. So Kevin Kelly shuts up and sits back. He's like, okay, that's what the guy wants to do. I'll just let him sit back. He'll call the moves. I'll pop in when I need to. When the guy isn't talkative and just wants to give facts, he calls action, asks them for their opinion on something that gives the facts or some historical knowledge. He's a mix of Gorilla Monsoon and Jim Ross. He's excellent. And the hilarious part is, he is the ideal Vince McMahon announcer because he's not more of an Manolo. He doesn't give you a clever turn of phrase or call the moves. He doesn't call the moves at all. He does what Vince McMahon told you to do. He tells the story. He'll sit there and go, Goto is upset because he doesn't feel he gets the credit he deserves. By winning this match, he feels he can get that credit. And then during the course of the match, he'll talk about how he's fighting so hard because he's hurt, but his pride says that he's got to prove it, and he'll tell the story of the match, tell the story behind the scenes, tell the story of the character. He tells the story. He doesn't call moves. It's Vince McMahon's ideal announcer, and he can't have him.
Great pick, Mo. Joel?
Kevin Kelly, like, there's no, like, Mo said everything about him. Like, there's nothing more I can add. He is part of such iconic moments now, and he is such a smart announcer that, yeah, he is what I enjoy listening to him, and I look forward to listening to him Wrestle Kingdom 13.
Well, I agree with both of you. I think Kevin Kelly is great. I'm going to go with Mauro just because you just notice how much better Mauro Ranallo is than Vince Joseph or whatever his name is.
Oh, yeah, Vic Joseph, yeah.
The pay-per-view Vic Joseph came in, and the lack of the energy that dropped for NXT. And the wrestlers still killed it, and they brought it in there. But the energy that Mauro brings to a match, Kevin Kelly it was hard. It was two really hard picks for me, just being a broadcaster myself and idolizing broadcasters and going in what I go in and looking at what I look with broadcasters. That was the deciding point for me, is when you saw how much different the energy level is that Mauro brings to an NXT broadcast compared to Vic Joseph, and the electricity from that ladder match that he called. It's just what you want from a broadcaster. Kevin Kelly does a great job as a storyteller. Mauro does a great job too, but he also gets you excited as every single big move is hit, and it ramps up as the move and the match continues to move forward and forward like a book, and each chapter continues to go. Mauro gets you excited as you move on with it.
Yeah, I don't think that Gargano versus Almas would have been nearly as good with anybody else. Like, he was so great that match. So, I mean, he is an excellent, like, he is number, it's those two. I mean, I'd love to get them in the booth together. Like, yeah. It'd just be awesome. Like, that would be the ideal. Absolutely the ideal. And the funny thing is, one is a guy that Vince McMahon, like I say, is his ideal announcer, who used to absolutely suck, but has become great away from Vince McMahon. The other one is somebody who became great away from Vince McMahon, and Vince McMahon couldn't tame, and now just leaves alone.
Yeah, and Kevin Kelly's great. Also, just honorable mention, she's been up and down, but just shouts to Renee being the first woman to be in that position, being a fellow Canadian, always admiring her here. She's got some work to do, but just shouts to her being the first woman in the booth.
No comment.
There's some problems with stuff there, but just being a fellow Canadian, I've idolized her career. She's been able to move on and being the first woman in the booth. Cheers to her for that.
Best no comment.
Best non-wrestling performer. I'm going to go with this one. He had one of the best-selling shirts on Pro Wrestling Tees during Thanksgiving week. He's always constantly entertaining. It's Fat Ass Masa. Yeah,
that's a great one.
Fat Ass awesome Masa, one. Whenever he comes on, is fantastic no matter what and when you see him. I wish they would have done a little bit more with him, but to me, the best non-wrestling character this year for me, whenever I got to see him, was Fat Ass Masa.
fantastic pick.
Thank you. Joel?
Oh, me now? This one was a little tricky for me. I wasn't entirely sure. There were a few people that stood out. But I'm going to go with Selena Vega. I think she's done a tremendous job. She wrestles, but I feel like her strength is in that manager role with Almost. So I went with Vega. I could be wrong, and that's perfectly fine, but I thought her, just the progression she's had with Almost and just what she's been able to do to add to Almost's character is fantastic.
By the way, last year, clean sweep for Daniel Bryan. Mo?
Yeah, Vega was probably better in NXT, which is why I wouldn't say I considered her. Though I'm going with somebody very similar, because she also sort of wrestles, but I mean, that's not really why she's great. And that's Brandy, because I don't think anybody could have elevated. You forgot about her, didn't you? You didn't even think about it. You were thinking WWE. But the fact is that Brandy adds so much to Cody's act. I don't think I've seen a valet character add as much to that act since, I don't know when, maybe even Miss Elizabeth. Like, she's just so fantastic.
Oh, I'm kicking myself.
Are you going to switch? Are you going to switch?
Yeah, I'm going to switch. Brandy. Yeah, that you think about it, and you even look at what she did in Final Battle and just the little moments, the spear that she had on Jay Lethal, and just her character on being the Elite and everything tied in with that. It's just, Yep. That was smart.
That's a great pick, Mo, and I probably would switch, but I want Fat Ass Moss to be in writing for the rest of time.
So. Yeah, and he's a great pick. He really is.
Most improved. Mo, I'm going to let you lead off on this one.
Ooh, most improved. Well, I think this is a slam dunk. Mustafa Ali. Like, this guy, came into the Cruiserweight Classic as an alternative in case there was an injury. And, even a year ago, I wasn't thinking about how great he was. And this year, I don't think there's anybody in the main roster who had more consistent great matches in WWE, if you would consider him main roster, and I guess now he officially probably is. I don't think anybody. I think that he was number one. Cedric Alexander was number two for great consistent matches. Then you probably go to AJ and Seth Rollins, and I think they were up and down for, like, consistent in-ring. It's those two. So he came – he's progressed so far in 2 years, not – going through really the NXT system, but within the WWE system. And of course it helps that he doesn't have to, when he's on 205 Live, they don't have to wrestle in the way that they're told to keep from getting over.
That's a great pick. I'm going to go and then I'll let you finish off, Joel. Mustafa Ali is definitely a great one. I'm going with the Velveteen Dream because he started in that pay-per-view last November. And then that was kind of his first shine when he had that match against Aleister Black. And then he took that match against Aleister Black. And then he just became a super duper star in NXT and became someone that John Cena and others have considered to be a future WWE champion. And he proved that his gimmick isn't just this one trick pony type of situation. And added that he's not too bad in the ring. And every time that he comes out for his entrance, you're looking to see what he's wearing, what's on his tights. He brings this electricity to him and this curiosity that a lot of wrestlers just don't anymore. And that's why I got Velveteen. But, oh, Mo, I got to give it to you, too. A great pick with Mustafa Ali, Joel.
Well, and the thing, I mean, Velveteen is somebody, again, I considered. Didn't go with him for the simple fact that I still think that he's so far. I think Mustafa Ali is closer to reaching his ultimate potential, whereas I feel that the progression is still kind of in the middle for Velveteen Dream, which talks to how good he can be.
Mm-hmm. Joel?
Those are both great picks. My pick is over in Japan. His year didn't start off as great. He had an all right match at Wrestle Kingdom, and now he's just progressively gotten better and bigger and more important to their company, and it's Jay White. Like, this is a guy that I know a lot of people were a little on when they revealed the Switchblade gimmick was him. And then you just seen the progression that he's had from beating Kenny Omega for the U.S. title to now being in a marquee matchup against the Ace of Japan in Okada. He is now the ace for the Bullet Club. They have fully changed, and under his presence of being the top guy for them. I'm really excited. Jay White wasn't someone that I was like, ah, he's all right, it's okay. His match with Tanahashi was all right, but he's just grown exponentially, and he's his wins in the G1 were impressive, just simply because it fit his character and fit the gimmick of Jay White. And now he's just, I'm interested to see where 2019 goes for Jay White.
Great pick. Next, we get to go on to Best Comeback. And last year's nominees for Best Comeback, I picked Neville, Mo picked Mickey James, and Joel picked Enzo.
Oh, I knew that was coming. Just to remind everyone that now officially on this podcast, I beat Josh second time in fantasy football, so he's 0-2 to me. So just make sure that that's out there. So
yeah, all my guys are injured, but we're not here to talk about fantasy football. We're here to talk about this. Everyone has misses in this. Joel, most improved this year.
Most improved.
I mean, best comeback. I mean, best comeback.
It's Daniel Bryan. Okay. He was hurt. It was looking like he was going to be leaving WWE, and now he came back, and it was a lot like when Jericho first came back with the Save Us Y2J, just wasn't clicking, then he turned heel, and now he is skyrocketing for SmackDown. He's probably one of the, when I was at the house show here in Calgary, he was extremely entertaining, and he was doing a great job getting booed. I think he had the best comeback this year.
Mo?
Yeah, it's a two-man race, and you know, Daniel Bryan's one of the two men. But, I mean, I just look at how it was a dud until he turned heel, you know, with him. And he probably could have been back earlier. I mean, it's great that he's back, but, you know, I mean, now that you see the facts, it probably, you know, if they had known... from a health wise that he could have been back earlier. You know, that's kind of an interesting thing that there's just all that missed time. But yeah, for several months it was a dud, and you know, his work with the Miz was a dud. And so I'm really happy he's back, but to me, it's Tanahashi by a country mile, like just a slam dunk once again, because let's face it. This is a guy who people were going into the G1 going, oh man, he's not going to win any matches. He's done. They're phasing him out. And now his legend has gone from being legend to one of maybe the greatest legends this year. Like, it's a comeback. It's a comeback from a guy who looked like he was headed to mid-card legendary status to a guy who is the most important over guy in the company and one of still the best in-ring workers on the planet.
And he very well, I know it's not this year, but at the start of next year, he could very well be the IWGP heavyweight champion.
Yep, and people didn't think that was ever going to happen for him again.
Mine, I can't comment. I think Tanahashi is obviously a great one. I didn't get a chance to see him as much. Obviously winning the G1, tremendous. I'm going to go with Daniel Bryan just because it was simply just a situation where we just didn't think we'd ever see this guy in the ring again, and he fought his way back. Hasn't been the greatest comeback until about November, but the idea that this guy was done and worked his ass off to do the same treatment that Paul Kariya has been doing, although Paul Kariya can never go back to play hockey, and now he's getting to get back in the ring and fight for his dreams, is pretty awesome, but obviously pretty great with Tanahashi as well, that he's doing what he's doing. Next up, we have Best Gimmick. Last year, I picked Braun Strowman, Joel picked Velveteen Dream, and Mo picked Aleister Black. Mo, you can go first.
Oh, yeah. Well, and how about a slam dunk? This was a slam dunk, right? You know, the best gimmick is Minoru Suzuki, because it's only sort of a gimmick. You know, it really blurs the lines between reality and not. I mean, this guy, you're like, he is dangerous and he is mean. And you don't know how much is a gimmick and how much isn't. But all I know is that if Braun Strowman was in the ring and with him, and he's 6 foot, you know, 6 inches taller and 120 pounds heavier, and I felt like if he did anything to piss him off, he would just step up to him, go with that little grin on his face, lick his lips, and you'd be like, this man who's who's 6 inches and 120 pounds taller is about to get killed. He would get killed in a real fight, and you know it's real. That's why he's the best gimmick.
Joel?
The best gimmick for me, it wasn't throughout the whole year, but it's the man, Becky. It feels like you mentioned blurring the lines. It feels like this is more of the real Becky, where it's not the happy-go-lucky Becky Lynch. It's more of, I'm going to take what I deserve, and I'm going to go out and I'm going to take it. And that's what she said on several podcasts over the last little bit. She has made an impression, and she very well could have changed the WrestleMania main event for next year, from Charlotte to herself, with just what she's been able to do. Her gimmick transcends well on Twitter and social media, and it draws people in. There's not a day that goes by that you won't find Becky tweet on the front of the wrestling subreddit, and it's just simply because people want to see and know what Becky Lynch is talking about.
This was a really tough pick for me. Suzuki, obviously, I didn't get to see as much watching New Japan. But from what whenever I hear Joel or anyone talk about him, obviously he sounds like a crazy person. But for me, this kind of just, the Becky was the front runner, and then this one, it definitely wasn't the full year. It's a 6-week sample, but it came out in 6 week, and it goes to what Paul Heyman always said, is the best examples of gimmicks and of wrestlers are that person, and then put it up to 100. To a million, and that was Daniel Bryan. In this short 6 weeks, what he's been able to do from going to a bum run to becoming this organic terrorist and naming the belt Daisy and wearing thrifty clothes and doing all this different stuff and getting to see that in Calgary live and getting to see him perform on these pay-per-views and what his mind is working, especially even in that Brock Lesnar match. He's been able to take something and now run with it that I'm sure we'll be talking about in 2019.
I didn't think that his heel turn would work, but he's so smart. His psychology is so good that it is. In some ways, I still think it isn't, though that's an argument for another day and another show. But, he's obviously been incredibly effective. When everybody's talking about how this is their favorite character now, and he's the heel, but he's still getting the heat from the audience, that's a good sign.
Match of the year. Last year, it was a clean sweep. Kenny and Okada 2. Joel, what do you got for match of the year?
You keep the same pay-per-view, Dominion. You fast-forward a year, and you still have Kenny and Okada. 2 out of 3 falls. It was one of the most anticipated matches this year for me. And just to finally see Kenny win it, and just the story they told with the Rainmaker, and it just not working, and just the build and everything that happened, Don Callis' call of hook the leg, just rings. It was the match of the year. Like there's a lot. There were a couple other matches out there. There's some from WWE, some from Japan, but this personally sticks out to me as my match of the year.
Mo?
Yeah, that is the best match of the year. It's not my pick for match of the year because it's not the match that had the most emotional impact on me. And so I'm going with the match that did have the most emotional impact on me. That, though, is as far as like a storytelling match and you know, just a flawless match performance, it's that one. But the match that when I think of wrestling this year, the first image that pops in my mind every time is the crowd going absolutely banana and Tanahashi and Ibushi slapping the shit out of each other. Sweat flying off their face, emotion in their face, so much feeling so real in the fight to win the G1. Nothing emotionally affects me like that match. That match is such, it felt more important than, given the both men's journey, than even Omega winning the belt. And I think when I look back, the one problem with the Omega thing is I went into it with 100% certainty that he was winning it. There was no point, even when he lost the first fall, that I thought he's not winning it. But it was a perfectly told story. But it didn't have that emotional impact in the same way for that reason.
Great pick. For me, unfortunately, like I said, I didn't get to watch as much as Japan, and I actually still haven't seen that Omega and Okada match, sadly.
Oh!
I know.
Oh, how can you even do awards?
for me, the match that stood out to me, like I've seen some clips here and there of that match, and it looked tremendous, but obviously you can't get the idea unless you watch it. But TLC in New Orleans was the best ladder match I've ever seen in my entire life. Every single second you were left dropping your jaw of what was going on in the ring. They even made Lars Sullivan look like a good wrestler in that match from the spots they were able to give him. Mauro obviously added to the electricity of that. Everybody in there did their job. Ricochet got to show a lot of his spots. Adam Cole, Velveteen with the crazy elbow drop. It was one of the greatest ladder matches I've ever seen, and maybe the best match I've ever seen in NXT, which is a huge statement in its own right. It was just a tremendous, tremendous match in what was a great show and probably the best show of WrestleMania week.
Oh, it's a fantastic pick. I mean, it's a great pick. A lot of NXT, again, had so many great matches. I mean, you could argue for that. You could argue for a bunch of others. They're, you know, fantastic product.
Mustache Mountain versus Undisputed.
Yeah. I mean, the Vega versus Gargano, that's my favorite NXT match of the year.
That was very good.
Almost flawless. Almost.
I thought Black versus Johnny was really good. I really enjoyed that. You could argue for Ciampa and Dream as well.
Go ahead, Sergio.
There's a lot from NXT, and there's a lot from Japan. That whole G1 offered you incredible matches. There's an Ishii match against Omega that could easily be in this spot as well.
Oh, I love that match. Love that match.
I really also really liked, I know I couldn't make it on here, but I really liked Becky and Charlotte from Evolution. I thought that was a tremendous match as well. The previous women's TLC match that we just had was well. There's a tremendous amount of good wrestling this year from all over the globe. Even Jericho and Omega was a tremendous match too that we had at the beginning of the year. The feud of the year, gentlemen. Joel?
For me, just from the story, from a storytelling standpoint, and just what it will eventually lead to later on in April of this year, it's Johnny versus Ciampa. Like this, I wasn't entirely sure how this was going to go, and I wasn't sure what we were going to get from Ciampa, but he's killed it as the heel, and Johnny killed it as the babyface until Ciampa finally corrupted him and finally took, sent poor little Johnny off into a very dark path. I thought that was the feud of the year, and I think they still have one more match to go, and that's next year.
Mo?
Yeah, no, that's also my pick. I mean, as much as I wanted to go with Ishii versus Suzuki because it's great and it's heated, and they're just such ideal opponents, the fact is that Ciampa versus Black had so much more heat and so much more audience emotion than anything else related to the WWE product this year, that perhaps, except for perhaps Becky versus Charlotte, which really had it as well, but in the wrong way because the crowd was cheering the wrong person. Whereas in this one, it was the story that they were trying to tell that got over, and such great matches. So yeah, just an excellent choice.
Yeah, I got to agree with you guys. You guys kind of said everything there is to say. We kind of thought too with how long of a delay there was with the Gargano injury, with the Ciampa injury, mind you, that we wouldn't be able to get to this point of having the feud of the year, that it would lose steam and everything like that, and not being able to trust, even though it was NXT, maybe not being able to trust the WWE to get to that level. But god damn it, if they didn't have one of the best of the year. Best angle. Joel, you had Jericho in Japan. Mo, you had Joe choking out Paul Heyman. And I had FOF. I do not know what that means, but who knows?
FOF. Jeez, yeah. I have no idea.
I do not remember. This is why you put the full word and not abbreviations. Mo,
yeah,
what was your best angle of the year?
Slam dunk. Let's go with who injured Aleister Black.
Yep.
Yeah, like that's such an awesome. Here's an angle that they got so much out of, created so much interest in, and they never intended to do it.
Yeah.
They had to do it because of an injury, and then they managed to pull that off. Oh, it's fantastic.
Joel?
Yeah, I Yeah, that was my whole thing. This wasn't supposed to happen, and yet they turned that into one of the most interesting NXT stories. You weren't sure, you had an idea it could be little Johnny, but you didn't fully know, and then were fully revealed, and then you're like, holy crap. And then just the promo Johnny cut afterwards, being in the spot, and that led to the match with Black, and it leads to eventually a cage match between the two at NXT. So this one accidental angle has led to probably two quality matches for NXT, and it happened by accident.
I will agree with you guys on that one too. So we have our second sweep there, and you guys kind of just stole it all away again. Best pay-per-view of the year, Joel. You picked G1 Finals. I picked NXT War Games, and Mo picked Death Before Dishonor. What do you got this year, Joel?
It's all in. Just what it means, the fact that they were able to do it. I felt like I was the only one that believed they could sell out the arena, and they did it. And they
what are you talking about? I predicted 3 months ahead of time when you guys were talking about you didn't know if it was possible. Said they're going to sell out in 10 minutes.
Joel always did. I will give Joel credit. I was always, hell no, there's no chance.
But I didn't just say they'd sell out. I was like, literally, they're going to sell out in 10 minutes. Like,
The fact that they did it, and the fact that it was a good show, it had no hiccups except Marty going well above the time. It worked. Penis Droids worked. Like, this was built from a YouTube show that was originally a travel vlog for these wrestlers. They built a pay-per-view that did decent numbers from a YouTube show. They didn't need TV.
We don't really know the numbers, though. That's one thing. Don't really know the numbers.
Meltzer hasn't revealed anything on that.
Meltzer doesn't know them either.
No, he
has no idea.
Them.
They're never given to him.
No, they know that they did well, surprisingly well streaming, but there's no word on the television buys, which has many people thinking it may be disappointing. But obviously, there's still enough to it, and it's a huge important event.
I wonder if, with the speculation of All Elite Wrestling, if they know the numbers at least, and that's why they're
you would think.
Yeah. So that gives me a little bit of hope, but they built this show from a YouTube show. Like that to me, they didn't have any backing of any major TV distribution. They got on WGN America. I think that was later into the build up for this. They didn't even have that when initial ticket sales went out. So to me, it's show of the year, and it could be something that's very important for the future of professional wrestling.
Nope.
Yeah, no. That's a great pick. You know, I mean, it's the most important show of the year, without any question. I don't think it was the best show of the year, though I was highly entertained. But my favorite show of the year, and it probably doesn't hurt that it was so recent, but, you know, just a few days ago. But, like, I loved Final Battle this year. Like, I thought ROH's Final Battle was so good. It had everything. It had a plunder match, had an incredible ladder match. You know, this I Quit match had a great technical wrestling match between Gresham and Sabre Jr. Like, it had everything except for a comedy match. Like, it had everything professional wrestling has to offer except for a comedy match, and it was all awesome. I love that event.
That's a really good pick. I haven't got a chance to see it, but I've heard good things about it.
Oh, it's fantastic.
Both you guys, great picks. Joel, love the passion for All In. All In was up in that. I wanted to give Evolution a shout just for, obviously, top to bottom, it just couldn't carry that good of a card to be of the year, but loved what it stood for. But and All In definitely was in consideration for me. I just went with just purely what was the most exciting wrestling show, which when I left, I wanted more and more and more of it, and that was NXT New Orleans. From the top to the bottom of the card, with the ladder match to the Johnny Ciampa match to Black and Almas to the Undisputed versus the Authors and Pete Dunne and Roderick. It was just for the Dusty Classic. Even Shayna Baszler, who I'm not the highest on, with Ember had a really good match. It was just a tremendous show.
You didn't pick Backlash?
I know, right?
Backlash? No, I think that's a great pick. You know what? I feel like we take a lot of us take NXT for granted. These shows, they're all so good that I don't know that any of them stick out so much because they're all so damn good, and we just take them for granted that they're going to be great and don't give them the credit they deserve.
Absolutely. So great picks right there, boys. Next, I think this will be a clean sweep because this is the one award so far that we've never disagreed on. Since we've started this, best promotion, it has been a clean sweep for New Japan. Joel, does that continue?
I think so, but it's not Japan this year. I'm going to go with NXT because, like Mo said, it's consistently each takeover you look forward to. The hour-long shows are such an easy watch. I know it's under the WWE umbrella, but I try to forget that it's connected to WWE. It just, from top to bottom, consistently delivers. The main events have been great. You have such highly touted and highly sought-after talent on your roster that people want to watch and want to see. You've been able to develop stars like Velveteen. Whether that carries on to the main roster remains to be seen, but I have my doubts. There's a point where I don't want anyone to leave the NXT roster. I don't want any of them to go up to the main roster. I want them to all...
EC3 can go up. It's okay.
Yeah. You've kind of cleaned some clutter out, and now you've got room for other guys. But, I mean, we didn't mention him at all up to this point, but Ricochet's had a great year in NXT. Mm. There's so many guys that have just consistently delivered on NXT that... I think it's the promotion of the year.
Mo, do you concede, go with that as well?
Yeah, absolutely. I actually think that is the right pick because New Japan has had great stuff, but they've lost a little momentum lately. There's been some behind-the-scenes stuff, and they're kind of up and down. I don't think that they have done their invasion or whatever you want to call it, into the American market. I don't think they've done it as smoothly as they could have. Whereas this has been NXT's best every year, I think. So I think, you know, that's a good pick.
I agree with you guys as well. NXT, the show, number one, is just the easiest watch every Wednesday, 1 hour watch. And every time the takeovers come on, super, super into it. And there's hardly ever a bad match. I can't even tell you this year the worst NXT match because I don't know if that exists.
And the thing is that the weekly show this year has been better than it has in the past. We always know the takeovers will be great, but sometimes the weekly shows have been a bit of a slog to get there. But this year they've really been really good.
Yeah, they really have. Like it's. I think just too, if you look at from the top of the bottom, I think Joel mentioned it too. It's just the talent level that they have right now is unbelievable. From the Undisputed to Ricochet and Matt Riddle and Keith Lee haven't even started yet.
Uh-huh.
And the women's division, unfortunately for Dakota Kai, I like that she was getting some momentum. She's got her butt. Bianca Belair, she's starting to gain some momentum. You have Shiri coming up. You have the Four Horsewomen coming. It's just depth all over the place. Best television show or best show we're going to go with right now. Last year, I picked SmackDown. Joel, you picked Being the Elites. And Mo, you picked Ring of Honor. Mo, what do you got this year?
Oh, slam dunk. The Edge and Christian show that totally reeks of awesomeness. It's pretty much the reason why I couldn't cancel my WWE subscription, waiting for it to come back. And then it came back. It's funnier than ever. I mean, for a guy like me, those guys are, they reference stuff that I get all the time. Like they're guys I would just hang out with and have laugh about and talk shit about wrestling with. It's such a perfect show for me. I love it.
That's a great pick. Joel?
It's Being the Elite again. It built all in. Like that to me is a big enough deal. And you take the fact that I cared about who murdered famous dick wrestler Joey Ryan, Cody getting the money shakes and the return of the fallen angel. SCU, I feel like this has really breathed life into Christopher Daniels, Frankie Kazarian, Scorpio Sky. I feel like SCU was good, but I feel like with being on BTE, this has just elevated them. I feel like this has elevated all those guys, from Marty to Hangman. This has really brought out their personality and their character. Flip Gordon, it helped build up Flip Gordon. You wanted Flip booked for huge. All In, and that was one of the main stories in I can't speak BTE.
I gotta agree with Joel. ENC I obviously really liked this year quite a bit, but what Being the Elite was able to do, Joel was a year ahead of this with this pick. They were able to take a YouTube show and make you care about every little thing, from two guys pointing fingers at you to when Marty broke it. I can't explain the joy I had of before watching All In with some of my friends that are in the casual wrestling territory and explaining it to them. And it wasn't convoluted or hard to explain to them like some WWE booking. It was like, well, there's this, this, and this. And it was pretty easy for them to follow along to what the storylines were. Basic, simple booking, which you would think it would be easy nowadays to have, but Being the Elite is so good at it, and that's why it's my show of the year. Breakout star, Joel.
Can I just pause for a second? I'm watching SmackDown right now, and Mustafa Ali just pinned Daniel Bryan. So I feel like that's noteworthy and worth mentioning on the show. Is just that's something that you don't see often, and yeah, I just figured I'd mention that.
Goes back to my pick, right? He deserves it. Like he was best in ring. I really believe he was the company's best in ring performer last year, you know, outside of NXT. And Cedric Alexander was number two. Like, I really believe that.
Yeah. And like, I don't want to get too sidetracked, but I really feel like Brian is making calls. Like, he's got, I feel like he's got some creative control. And I feel like things like this are his call to make. And I think he's like, I want to put Ali over. And this is elevating him. This is something that when you look at wrestling and look at the end of the year, this is a big deal for this guy.
He's the type of guy they should be wanting to push. In this day and age, he's an ideal guy to be pushing.
Well,
let's get back to the awards. Okay, come on. I know. Come on.
I've got so much to say.
I'm going to get hungry. Come on.
Breakout star of the year, Joel.
Breakout star of the year is Becky Lynch, because she went from, oh, you know, we weren't really talking about Becky, and we always thought, oh, Becky's a good hand. The crowd cheers for her. Remember Money in the Bank. And just from what she's been able to do from SummerSlam onwards with the character that she is and being the man, she just has broken out, and she could potentially be one of the first women to headline WrestleMania.
Yeah, that's my pick as well. So, and I think you kind of stole everything I was going to say. So, Mo.
Yeah, and great pick. Don't get me wrong, but I don't see how it can't be anybody but Jay White. Jay White, absolutely. 1 year ago, Jay White, it was like, wow, he's going to face Tanahashi. He's this new character. Is he going to hold up to the pressure? And then he has the match, and everyone's like, ah, it just didn't work. That's Tanahashi's worst match at the Tokyo Dome in years, maybe ever, to being the number one heel in all of wrestling, anywhere in all the world. The most truly number one heel, without question. And to arguably being in the most anticipated match at the Tokyo Dome this year without the title even being on the line. Like, what a breakout year for this guy. Just for ridiculously amazing.
Jay White, good pick, Mo. Next is my favorite award. It's the Shit Sandwich Award. This award is awarded to, you were wrong about this person, so eat shit. Last year, for me, it was Elias. For Joel, it was Killian Dane. And for Mo, it was Braun Strowman. I'll go first on this one. For me, it's Ruby Riott. I just didn't see it. I just thought she was kind of like this female, like CM Punk wannabe. And boy, was I wrong. Where I don't think the Riott Squad is a very good stable, I do think she is one of the more underrated talents in the entire company. She can cut a promo, and she is tremendous in the ring. And I think once she can get away from that, she can be one of the top performers in the entire company, because she is a very, very talented woman. Mo?
You know, actually, I'm going to ask you something. You guys hear me bitch about things. What am I wrong? Who do I deserve to get the shit sandwich for being wrong about? Who do you guys think it is?
Well, Joel, you go pick yours and then tell Mo what has.
No, I'm actually thinking that's a better, more accurate. Because I honestly, I do think, like, I did not think that Shayna Baszler would be as good as she is.
I really did not.
So, I mean, I feel like I deserve a shit sandwich there, but there's probably better choices. I just can't think of them off the top of my head. That's the one I kept coming back to. So if you can think of one that's better for me, please let me know. I will gladly.
You were wrong about Shane McMahon. Those punches are fantastic.
We've broken Mo.
No, the kicks. It was the kicks last week. The kicks brought him back to Earth.
Mo's broken.
Joel, well, tell him what we've fixed Mo. Who do you have? And then we'll figure out Mo's.
You just have to power cycle Mo. Turn him off and turn him back on again. Mine is, I guess, Jay White.
You don't turn me on at all.
I don't think that's my job. That's Josh's. Anyway.
Nice.
Anyways, I think it's Jay White. I wasn't totally sold on Jay White. I remember when he came in with the gimmick, and I was like, oh, well, don't overly care. And now I very much care. When he finally joined Bullet Club, and he had Gato and everyone involved, it was like, oh, this is actually very interesting. I'm very intrigued where this goes. And, yeah, it's Jay White, I think.
You know who, you'll remember, I remember you asking me after the Tokyo Dome match last year about Jay White, and I said he's got to improve a couple things. His facial expressions in particular, I said, have to improve. He doesn't have the facial expressions to convey. But look at his facial expressions now compared to a year ago, and I think that's the biggest improvement in him. I was always a fan of him because I think my runner-up for match of the year last year was him versus Ospreay in ROH. That was, like, ridiculously good.
I'm trying to think about who you could have been wrong on, Mo. And I can't really think. I mean, Strowman would have been the guy easily last year from what he had this year. I can't think of any really main event talent that you were wrong on, to be completely honest. Joel?
I got nothing.
Really?
I hate to say it. I really hate to say it, but I feel like Mo is
the futurist.
More right than he is wrong.
You got to pick something, though. So who do you think was, like, maybe just not a shit sandwich?
I will say Shayna Baszler, then, is my pick for myself. I mean, she's, like, 38, and came in pretty green. I'm like, there's no way she can get to where she needs to be to. And it's really, she's carried that division, and that division is strong. So.
Yeah, she was up there for me as well. I still don't fully get it, but she, every time she's in the ring, her job as a submission wrestler, she's done a very good job of portraying that. And now with the Four Horsewoman, she's done a good job with that. Biggest story of the year. We've swept this in the past 2 years. The first year we did this was the sale of the UFC. Last year, it was the rise of the indie. So we definitely saw that coming correctly.
Yeah.
What is it this year, Mo?
Well, and as much as I'd like to say Ronda signing with WWE or the WWE's 5-year ridiculous money deals, and those are obviously those two storylines are tied in together, as much as I'd like to say it's those, what has created not just a tidal wave, like a tsunami? And I understand from listening to they're supposed to pronounce it T, which apparently, according to George Takei. So I didn't know that, but I'm trying. I'm sure I'm saying it wrong, but... A tsunami of like wave tsunami of what, like, domino effect. Nothing's done it like the All In pay per view, and like we have not even seen a small portion of what is going to come out of that and how that's going to change the business. Or has potential to, like, it's the biggest thing affecting all of 2019.
Yeah.
And it's something that happened in 2018.
Joel,
it's the Elite. It's the Elite. It's All In. It is where they're going to sign, what they're going to do in 2019. That is something that has been debated about, discussed online, trying to figure out where they're going to go, what they're going to do, and now, and especially with the trademarks leaking for All Elite Wrestling, and just the massive amount of people that got signed shortly after that got leaked, and it sounded like that was a legit thing. It just shows the impact that they've had, that there was actually...
The amount of money being spent on a guy like Bandido to go to ROH, is directly related to that pay-per-view. Like the butterfly effect that it has is just so amazing.
Yeah.
Well, I was going to say, Joel, you kind of mentioned this to me, so I'll give you credit on this, is the leak of the trademarks, Mo, kind of led to this domino effect the last few weeks, because once that leak started, Walter, Bandino, Brody King, POC, everything MLW is doing right now for trying to sign everyone up, that domino effect from those trademarks scared the hell out of everybody.
It caused the securing of talent. And like you said, these guys are getting more money because from what Dave Meltzer is reporting, that All Elite Wrestling is offering decent contracts. They're not offering a little bit of money. It's just they don't know. I think people are scared of how this all looks at the end, and if this does ultimately work out or not. And that's why they're going a little bit of the safer route. But guys are getting paid. And that's a good thing for wrestlers. That's what you want, is guys and girls getting money for what they're doing.
Absolutely, and I agree with you guys both, too. I think it's just the rise of the indies we kind of saw coming last year. It was very slow and steady last year. This year, it just came in a tidal wave. It's a tsunami. And it's not just All In, which has been huge, but it's the rise of MLW, getting that hour of television, even though they wanted two, but Court Bauer went to the one. So it's seen what MLW has been able to do, ROH reshifting what they're going to do, New Japan consistently trying to get stuff in the States. It's this new and Impact having a better year than they normally do and kind of staying the wave and staying consistent. But I think just between what ROH is doing right now, what AEW could be, and MLW is just this very quiet promotion that I'm definitely keeping an eye on, because they're someone that's also a rise that has a lot of talent that could also rival AEW for some of this indie love.
I like what they do. You know, I like the Hart Foundation there and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Time to the worst parts. The worst wrestler of the year. Joel, I know you had struggled on this earlier. What did you come up with?
I went with the lowest hanging fruit, and the lowest hanging fruit is Shane McMahon. Just any time it's going to be bad when he steps in the ring, and it makes you more impressive that AJ got a decent match out of Shane at WrestleMania. Just kicks, punches, just no, not a fan.
And by the way, last year I took Bray Wyatt, Joel took Jinder, and Mo took Dean Ambrose. Moa ahead of his time with the Dean Ambrose pick. But who do you have this year, Mo?
And you know what? I believe, if I remember correctly, I had to make that as like a last minute, switch.
Yeah.
Can you come back to me just one second? I'm just checking something.
All right. Well, so for me, this was actually a harder one, because there was a few really shitty wrestlers this year. Obviously, Shane deserves something, because they've just gone to the well too many times now. And the more you see,
best in the world.
Bobby Lashley was up there for me, because he just hurts people, and it's getting dangerous. To me, it breaks my heart, but it's The Undertaker. He is embarrassment in the ring. It's an absolute embarrassment when I see him in the ring, and he's getting to that level too, much like Bobby Lashley. He's going to hurt people, and I don't know if he was the one that hurt Hunter or not, but it's getting unsafe. He's way too slow. He's sluggish. And it's just not fun to see him in the ring anymore.
Yeah, it's amazing. Like I was actually thinking to myself this a couple nights ago, how at WrestleMania, I really think, like, in the past, you've gone to him, and it always has created this buzz. And this year, if you go to him, I think it actually creates, you know, people wanting to see the event less. Like, I think it's getting to that sad state now.
Nobody wants to see it, because I look at that Roman match now, and it was perfect. It was putting out Old Yeller, right? The double spear, and then everything gets to go down in the back. It was this perfect goodbye. The upcoming guy in the territory taking out the old grizzled vet. It's wrestling booking 101, and then it was ruined.
So the reason I needed a moment was to make sure I pronounce his name correctly, because it's not something, a name that comes up off my lips very often. Mm-hmm. And you know, he's off the radar, even though he's in New Japan. As much I hear it, New Japan gets all the praise, but Takashi Iizuka is this. His gimmick is that he is this crazy man. He's got a great entrance, gets led through the audience, and then when he gets to the ring, he takes off this Hannibal Lecter mask, and then the match happens, and he can't do anything. He's kind of an older guy. He's in his 50s. He doesn't really wrestle. He just kind of bites people. Then he takes out this stupid iron claw thing that looks like it's made out of you know what I'm talking about now. Looks like it's made out of tin foil, and people have to sell for it. And it just like he sticks out among with all this great stuff in New Japan as this phony terrible wrestler. So I got to go with him.
Next up, worst female wrestler of the year. Last year, clean sweep with Dana Brooke. Joel, you're ready to go first.
I think this will probably be a clean sweep, and it's Nia Jax.
Yep.
Just not safe, just dangerous, just, I mean, the Becky shot tells you everything you need to know. It's a great iconic image seeing Becky up there bloody and just yelling, but she doesn't remember it. And
yeah,
that's not a good thing. That's not something
almost
that
murders Zelina Vega.
Yep. Like
the amount of people she almost kills is ridiculous, and it's been going on for years.
Alexa Bliss,
it's an embarrassment.
Alexa Bliss, Bayley, she's injured.
Yeah,
you know, like this woman needs to, like, yeah. I mean, you don't even need to go around to us because we all agree on this one.
Yes.
Like I called her a couple years ago. I'm like, she's the drizzling shits, but she's not that good.
Somehow she gets a good match with Ronda, and that's like the only person she gets a good match with.
But you know what? No, come on. It's not even a really a match. It's a performance that they rehearse to death. So of course she gets a good, of course that's good. But that doesn't mean she's good. And she's probably afraid to hurt Ronda because she'll get her ass kicked.
Like you said, Mo and Joel, absolutely clean sweep because Mo, you brought it up a few years ago. She's the drizzling shits, and she's just unsafe, and it's not good to have her in the ring.
Better. I can only hope now that they've kind of done something with her and Becky, and I guess they could still have a match, but I do hope now they finally go, you know what? No, stop pushing her.
I hope so too. You saw her. Maybe she may have ended Alexa Bliss's career from how she hurt her. She almost ended.
That's like her best friend.
I know.
Like, legit. Like,
yeah.
I can't. I don't want to say really horrible things about her to the level I should. So
it's anger inducing, though. I think we can all agree on that. Because the more we see it, it's like, you know, this is not just a one time thing. Like, I brought up Bobby Lashley. Bobby Lashley's hurt two people. But Bobby Lashley, I do think, is a good performer. It's just been a bad year for Bobby Lashley. And it's not a consistent thing in his past to injure people.
Yeah, I mean, Seth Rollins has injured people too, but
but Nia is consistently unsafe and sloppy in the ring leads to injuries.
But you get angrier at the company than her in many ways, so forth. They let this keep going on.
Yeah, like you look at the injuries that Seth had to Finn or to Sting, both are preventable injuries, but just unfortunate. Cena, just unfortunate in the ring. Nia is just sloppy, like throwing Zelina and the punch and Becky, and we could go on and on. Worst tag team of the year, Mo.
You know what? Slam dunk. Bayley and Sasha Banks. Like, I know they're only sort of a tag team, but good lord, all of this is just awful. Just thinking about them in any way, and this whole year with them, and how they've wasted these two talented ladies. That's my worst tag team. Just go away. Like, they got go away heat, and they shouldn't.
Joel,
it's the Brothers of Destruction. You main evented a show and just you shouldn't have been, this has to end. This has to stop. Anytime they went with them, it was like, I do not care. I do not want to watch this at all. So for me, it was the Brothers of Destruction.
No, good pick. Mine is every tag team in the Mixed Mask Challenge. This thing was a complete waste of time. It didn't do anything for ratings. I guess the only maybe thing that worked was Mella and Truth to a degree, but even that's going to fizzle out. It was just the complete, come back to something Mo was talking about with Nia Jax. It was the drizzling shits. It was nothing more than to be a dance break. People joke now if someone signed or is brought up to the main roster that they'll be have to go and do the mixed match challenge and do a dance break. It's the laughing stock of WWE, of many laughing stocks that it has there, but it's one of the laughing stocks of the entire company this year. Next up, Mo again was way ahead of the curve last year in this. For worse from the mic, he had Baron Corbin.
Guess who my pick is this year?
I had Steph and no, Joel had Stephanie and I had Sarah Logan. Who do you have this year, Mo?
A repeat winner. Like, Baron I don't Corbin. See how it could be anybody but Baron Corbin, especially when they ask him to talk to so much and he's so damn boring. He just they can there. You know, there's a role for a guy like Baron Corbin. There is, but it's but talk about being miscast.
Yeah. Joel?
That's a great pick, and like that, I would change my pick to that, but I'm going to change my pick. I'm going to have my pick stay, and that's Dean Ambrose, because this is a guy that was supposed to be this. He betrayed Seth and on the night that it was revealed that Roman had cancer, and just every promo after was a comedy promo, and I think there was an expectation that we were going to get this crazed lunatic type ranting raving guy like the promos that he cut on Mick Foley when they were supposed to have a match, but that never happened. This guy, for all the talk that he is so good on the mic, and he can't, and this is partially on the writers, but this is on him as well, and just not delivering. And to me, in the short time that he's been back, it's just anytime he picks up a microphone, I'm like, I don't really care at all.
Two great picks by you guys. I'm going with the equivalent of nails on a chalkboard when this person cuts a promo, and that's Nia Jax.
Oh, God.
It is.
She was my number two.
It makes me want to vomit hearing her talk. And when she gets like this and over-exaggerates her words, much like she's in the ring, she's all over the place with the mic. She had a chance in a high-profile match for WrestleMania as the babyface against Bliss, and she totally failed to make me feel sympathetic for her as a babyface that was bullied. And then with two feuds against Ronda, she didn't know whether in the first one she couldn't defer if she was a babyface or a heel and make it work either way. And then this last one with Ronda, just absolutely terrible, and maybe with one of the worst promos of the year from a Raw a few weeks ago.
Yeah, she's terrible and awful. Like I say, my number two pick. But I do have to say this about the Dean Ambrose. Even that, I can't remember what it was, 24/7 or whatever they do. Like, that documentary thing that they did on him. Even that, I didn't think his talking was so good or got me over or made me interested. Even that was awkward.
The Austin podcast he did, I'll never forget how weird and awkward he was for that.
Yeah.
It was ridiculous. Most underutilized talent, Joel.
Ooh,
last year, by the way, I picked Finn Balor, you picked Finn Balor, and Mo picked Ty Dillinger.
I think most underutilized, there's a lot of guys that you could use a lot better. Like, this was tough because it's kind of, this one's a crowded section where you have a few guys that you can use more of. My pick, he was hurt, but I feel like you could have done a much better job with Kevin Owens. You could mention Tyler Breeze. Like, you look at the transition from what he did in NXT, showing up for one random match, not being mentioned on TV there, and he shows up and the crowd remembers him and he gets a big reaction. He wrestles Ricochet, and then he goes out and challenges Dean, and it's out to crickets. And that's really on WWE. This ward should really be, because it's consistently, it's who does WWE fail to use and fail to communicate to casual fans that, hey, you need to care about this guy. You could probably say the whole 205 Live roster is underutilized for the most part, because they didn't really promote it. Now with Ali and the things that he are doing may help them, but at the end of the day, my pick is KO, but there's so many, and that's the big drive home factor, is this is very similar to WCW. They had a lot of underutilized guys that they failed to use, that ultimately led to their demise, and it feels like WWE is just gleefully strolling down that step going, hey, Brothers of Destruction, why don't you come on back and wrestle one more match? You guys can do it, no problem. Here, let's have Kurt Angle be the central for the big change for Monday Night Raw. We're changing things up, and we're going to listen to you. And we're going to give you Kurt Angle. We're not going to help build a younger star. We're going to go to the well again. So that's my take on
that. And Joel, you didn't even mention all the stuff KO went through with Strowman from being thrown out in a porta potty after taking insane bump after insane bump that put him on the IR shelf. So KO is a great pick by you. Mo?
Yeah, you know what? He's you mentioned 205, the entire 205 roster. But the truth is, I feel like they're getting really close to unlocking the popular, like, you know, now that they have Mustafa Ali, they've moved him over. And anytime Vince touches it and brings anybody over to Raw or whatever, it hurts the product. But I feel like the crowd reactions are getting a little better and a little better, and they're getting to be a little more known. Cedric Alexander and Buddy Murphy pay-per-view had a pretty good crowd reaction, even though not everybody was in the building. So I feel like they're getting a little bit closer. But Grand Metalik is special. And there's so many guys that you could pick. And there's even guys outside of WWE you could pick. But, like, a guy who's should be one of the, you know, a company that really is looking for that Latino star and is so special. You know, you could also say the same thing about, you know, Cien Almas and how he has not been used well. But Metalik is even more special. And they don't use him in any way, shape, or form worth a note.
Two great picks for you guys. Mo, you kind of talked about my pick earlier. This was one of the best performers in the entire company at one point. Had a match of the year nomination. When you look at who she came up with, she was either one or two as far as the women in the entire division. And I don't know what happened. I mean, you got to maybe you just look at what she's been having to deal with. It's Sasha Banks. They have not given her any opportunity to be the performer she can. Whenever she gets in the ring, you look at Survivor Series when she got to be in there with Asuka, looked great. Last night had a great match with Natty. Even at the start of the year had a good match with Asuka as well. But she's been dragged down by this terrible, I don't even know if it's a feud with Bayley, whatever it is.
I don't know what the hell it is. Just a storyline, let's say.
But Sasha is so talented, and if they let her just be a heel or just let her go, she could be at the level that Charlotte and Becky are at right now.
Absolutely.
But for whatever reason, they're not letting her have that, and it's a damn shame because when she came from NXT, I thought she was the most talented out of all the women that came up, and right now she's just drowning.
Yeah, but again, there's a lot of those women that are, you know,
Last year, we had the worst gimmick, and it was a clean sweep for Sister Abigail, even though we saw it for one episode, and it never even happened. Joel, what's the worst gimmick this year?
The worst gimmick this year, I'm sure there are plenty, and I'm sure if you watch WWE programming, you will see a dozen terrible gimmicks. This one I just picked off the top of my head as something that stands out that I'm just like, I don't care, is Dean Ambrose's germaphobe / Bane / needle in the ass on Monday Night Raw. Just, and he can't have a good match. He should have been the worst male because he couldn't even have a good match with Seth. And that should say something.
It's a good point. Mo?
Yeah, he's a great pick, but I'm not giving it to somebody. I'm giving it to a character that I'm sick of. And that's the any heel authority figure. Done with it.
Well, you know who the new heel authority figure is? Is it's us. It's the WWE Universe.
Oh, great.
Yeah, you look forward to that.
Done with this. They suck. They can't come up with anything new.
Good job by both of you. I got to go with Joel also with Dean Ambrose and this germs thing. This guy, you look back to that Foley promo. You look back to what he did in FCW with William Regal. This guy was supposed to be this twisted and demented asshole that was going to just destroy everybody in his sight. And they gave him the ultimate heel motive and the ultimate heel out for the cheapest of heat off of his best friend's real life leukemia. It's like, that was a terrible decision to go with that, but okay, you gave it to him. Now he has all the heel heat in the world, and he has needles up his ass, and has guys with smoke masks, and it is just absolutely terrible, not to mention with what they do with Renee on the commentary to pair with it. The entire Ambrose package has just been absolutely repulsive and terrible. Next up, worst match of the year, Mo.
Okay, so I hate saying this. This isn't the worst match of the year, but it is the worst match of the year, and the we should have been talking about it as possibly the best match of the year, and instead it was a dud, and it's so disappointing. And that's what makes it the worst match of the year. As far as not meeting its potential, like most of the matches you'll talk about, I'm guessing both the matches you guys will both say, it's like, well, yeah, but really could it have been any good? It's probably as bad as you expected or close to. This one was expected to be brilliant, and then it just never got there. I was so disappointed to see AJ Styles and Nakamura at WrestleMania have that match.
Wow, that's a really good pick, Mo. Joel?
My pick is, it's from that same Mania, and, you know, say what you will, but it was supposed to, it should have been the crowning achievement for Roman Reigns, but it was Roman versus Brock. That was your main event for Mania, and more people did not care, and just, it didn't matter. And I think those two could have had a decent to good match. Not an all-time classic, but I think they could have easily had a good match and finally be done with everything and have pushed Roman to the top finally and beaten Brock, and it's over with. But for some strange reason, they decided to not go it. It just was a terrible, terrible, long, boring watch, and it just didn't... It should not have... And one of the reasons I'm putting it there is it's the main event for WrestleMania, and that should mean something, and it just... It didn't. It absolutely didn't.
There was a lot of matches I wanted to pick, but to me, this entire show we're going to get to in a second was an absolute piece of shit and a joke. And how they got to this was an absolute joke. It's the best of the world match with Shane winning. It was already a stupid enough show and a show that shouldn't have happened, and we'll get to that in a little bit, I'm very sure. But just, it was a slap in the face to any wrestling fan out there. Even if you didn't watch it, just hearing that made the show even more laughable that was part of it on a show that had a terrible DX and Brother of Destruction match. It was the best in the world match. Next we have the worst feud of the year, Joel.
Worst feud of the year is, WWE versus its fan base.
Good one.
Just
very good.
They refuse to give up their old ways. If you go back and listen to
Joel, it's going to be fresh now. We have fresh faces.
I don't want to talk about this anymore. This company.
We really should have ended on the positive ones. I get depressed.
This company has all the talent in the world, and they find a way to constantly squander it through heel turn post-match beatdown to just heel authority figure to stupid comedy to stupid not pushing the right people that the crowd want. Becky Lynch is a prime example of like, no, we gotta keep Charlotte as the baby face. Like, there's this can't happen. We have to have her as the baby face. Like, I don't care what the crowd thinks. We'll get them to turn. We'll use Edge to get the crowd to turn. And look at how that turned out for them. This is a company that is at war with its fans. And as much money as they're making, give it 5-10 years and they could be in a lot of trouble. As Mo has predicted.
Mo?
Ooh, worst feud of the year, Daniel Bryan and The Miz. The only thing I'll say to add on to that is, fuckers.
My worst feud of the year is Hunter versus Undertaker, because there was no reason to this. It was simply a cash grab. They led to terrible matches, one that got Hunter hurt. and one that made us not want to see Undertaker in the ring anymore. And it kind of goes back to Joel's point as well of WWE versus the fans. But everyone saw it for what it was. There was no point for it. The video packages that they could use on so much other talent to propel them were used for big blocks on Triple H versus The Undertaker. They got legends to talk about stuff when, again, they could use this for upcoming talent or talent that's not utilized enough, and it was wasted on Hunter and Undertaker's egos.
That's the thing. It's a pretty good buildup. It's just a match that sucks.
Yeah.
So, and I don't know that I would consider it a full feud. It's just kind of a one-off thing. Like, I'm going to defend my pick. I'm just going to say, like, could you guys have thought of an easier anything to book? Like, just hand it for you on a silver platter.
It was about as much of a layup as Bayley.
Yeah.
Female
and
Cena.
Guess what? Yeah. And guess what?
Yeah.
They just blew it.
By the way, last year, our worst feuds, I had Bray and Orton. Joel had Bray and Finn, and Mo had Jinder and Nock. Those were all really bad. Worst segments. Worst angle, worst segment. I had This Is Your Life. Joel had This Is Your Life, the segment with Alexa Bliss and Bayley. And Mo, you had Randy Orton burning down the Wyatt compound.
Can I just, I'm going to say mine, and I'm going to leave it alone.
Sure.
My worst angle is Roman deserved, got what he deserved. That is it. That's all you need to say on it.
Cool.
My
Not
worst
as much of an angle, though, or as much of just a statement?
It was used to angle to towards what Seth and Dean were
sure,
ultimately
okay.
going to feud over.
It's part of an overall shitty angle. It's not yeah. it's not the whole angle, but it's part of an overall awful angle. And if it, is it my turn or is it your?
Yeah, you, Sumo.
Yeah, so I got the constant, and it's, again, it's not one thing. It's the constant WWE heel turns. And turns and baby face turns, and especially the post match beatdown turns. It's the that angle that
you gotta get heat.
Anytime I see the same angle like 20 times in 1 year, to the point that I don't have to name one of them. I can just say that happened 20 times, so it doesn't. None of them matter. The first one doesn't matter, nor does the 20th, because it happened 20 times, the exact same angle in 52 weeks. It's a bad angle, and it's the worst angle of the year because it's constant.
Mine is, the heel turns rate is, whatever they're doing with Renee Young to use her as a proxy for Dean Ambrose. It distracts from the broadcast. It makes no sense of what they're doing. Even if she does turn heel, it's distracting the broadcast to have her as this secret, not knowing what's going on with Dean, and then going back to like a pure baby face the next match. It's a distraction. It makes no sense. And it's a terrible, whenever Corey goes over to her and asks her what's going on, what's in your mind, Renee, it makes no sense. It's pure nonsense, and it's going to lead to pure nonsense as well.
Mm-hmm.
Worst show of the year, fellas. I think this might be a clean sweep, Mo.
Raw.
Okay. I mean, where's pay-per-view? Oh, sorry, where's pay-per-view of the year first?
Oh, sorry. Okay, I thought you meant television show. Nope, you know. Yeah, so Crown Jewel. Like,
yeah.
Like, you know, as much as I want to say Backlash because it was terrible, Crown Jewel wasn't exactly some excellent event either. Admittedly, I didn't watch it, but the fact that they did it, like, it's disgusting.
It's the Saudi shows. It's easy. It's both Saudi shows.
Both were bad, but this one was at a whole other level.
Yeah, the Crown Jewel is definitely at another level, but the simple
fact... You're both, Jewel?
Yep, it's both of them. They're a nice little tie for just... And this ties into worst promotion of the year. Like, this was just a very, very, very bad choice. Not a fun show. I missed it. Thankfully, I saw a little bit of the Greatest Royal Rumble. I remember sending the poster for the Greatest Royal Rumble to you, Josh, and you thought that was kayfabe news, and that was a work, mm-hmm. and it was all a joke, and they weren't possibly going to do this. And we spent many times debating on how they're going to get out of Crown Jewel and where they were going to run the show else, but ultimately, doesn't matter if a journalist dies. All that matters is a couple $1 million in Vince's pocket. Not a lot, of money, but a little bit of money for Crown Jewel. But it's both shows.
Yeah, I mean, we can jump to the promotion. Obviously, you have WWE there. I obviously pick Crown Jewel as well. And you have, Mo, who do you have for which promotion?
Yeah, WWE. I mean, it's not... of course, anybody's going to have some good stuff, but the percentage of stuff that's not good, too good, and it's not even... And there's not even, average stuff in between. It's like, this is good, is, 15%, and this is average, is, 10%, and then it's 75% terrible.
Yeah. If it wasn't for what... WWE is my pick too. I think the only bright spot this year, obviously AJ had some good stuff and Seth had some good stuff, but the women were really the lone bright spot in the company this year. I thought the women really carried the company this year with Ronda and Flair and Becky, just did a tremendous job of being the highlights. And really one of the few enjoyable things was them. And then maybe an AJ match here or Joe match or Seth, but what they did at Crown Jewel and the cash grabs they had for stuff like Crown Jewel and cash grab for Australia, the consistent not listening to the fans, and now as we get to this the day before this show, of this backwards bullshit of, oh, it's all your show now, you're the authority, it's consistently backwards. It's to a point, it's weird seeing Vince McMahon grovel on television when next year the big story will come in about 3 months when we get to the year review show will be, how are they doing on Fox? And right now, you can see half of the reason for that groveling is them going to Fox and getting a big deal from the USA Network. It's a pretty embarrassing product to follow at times. Backlash, when the fans were backing out during the middle of the show because they knew Roman was going over and the booking was so simplistic and they were just sick of them not listening to them. It's WWE, without a question. This
year. Company at Backlash brought back Daniel Bryan for the first time since Fastlane 2015 and put them against they suck.
I think worst show is a sweep too, boys.
Oh, it's Monday Night Raw.
Yeah. I mean, because it's 3 hours. It would be a bad show anyways, and SmackDown has its problems, so it has more highlights. But SmackDown would also suck at 3 hours. 3 hours is unbearable.
Yeah. Shouts to Court Bauer for putting MLW to 1 hour when he was given two. Good for Court Bauer. Yeah, Raw's unwatchable for me, really. It's unless they have I'm gonna admit they brought me in hook, line, and sinker with the Vincent announcement, and that's one of the reasons the ratings were back. Go to the McMahons in case of emergency, break glass. But it's consistently a YouTube watch for me at this point of seeing what the clips are on YouTube and sometimes not seeing it all and just hearing word of mouth for Monday Night Raw.
I thankfully chose to go to the new Spider-Man movie, Into the Spider-Verse. It's amazing, by the way, instead of watching Monday Night Raw, and I feel like I made the right choice.
I think you did. And then we have our final award. It's the worst announcer of the year. I'll go with this, just being a broadcaster myself. I look at the broadcast, and you want to be able to be a storyteller. You want to engage the audience. And the most important thing is, when you do this, research, knowing your facts, which is very important, which Stephen A. Smith recently learned. The most important thing is all of that. And that is why, Jonathan Coachman, you are the first ever winner of the Booker T. Memorial Worst Announcer of the Year Award. Mo?
You know what? I just want to say this because, break glass, your comment, break glass, you get the Vince McMahon's break glass, ratings will go up. This is going to cause, when you bring them in, promise change, and then don't deliver, it actually just is going to make it that much harder for the next time he shows up for it to be effective.
Yeah.
Because there it is. I'm not giving it to an individual once again. I'm giving it to that third man or woman in the Raw booth. Because it doesn't matter who they put in there. Everybody they put in there has not worked out consistently. Be it Coachman, it's going back years. Going back, what's his name there? The lawyer character.
Tonga.
Tonga or Byron Saxton or...
Because three-man booths don't work, Mo. I've done three-man booths. It is the hardest thing Like, I think Michael Cole, for all the shit he gets, he has to do a lot of stuff. Yeah. I think Michael Cole, for what he has to do, is actually a pretty good broadcaster.
He's better than he gets to be in that show.
Yes.
Like, I remember seeing him, I think it was the previous year, I think he was the one who did the original NXT UK tournament.
Yep.
It's really good.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
Three-man booths are hard to do. Just as being in three-man booths, I hate doing a three-man booth whenever it's asked to me. I've been consistently, we'll put one more person in the booth. Three-man booths are death because you have two analysts in there, and sometimes they bicker at each other. It's good to just have the play-by-play guy and then the color commentator. The color commentator can give you facts and the analysts. It's easy.
Though it is not impossible to work. I mean, that is important that back when it was Bobby Heenan and Schiavone and Mike Tenay would come in. Tenay would come in with all these facts and historical stuff.
Yeah.
So you would have a guy calling the action with Schiavone. You would have Heenan being the funny color guy. And then you would have all the interesting facts about the luchadors and stuff that Tenay had. And it worked. And I've seen three men with Kevin Kelly, because he's so good at it, make it work when they bring in a third man. They have Rocky Romero, maybe somebody else there. It is possible. But whoever they put in that spot for years now, and this year was maybe the worst year ever, because there were so many. How many people worked that three-man spot this year?
Probably Booker, Renee. I don't think Otunga did this. It was Booker, Renee, and Coach, but I will agree with you. Three-man booths can be good. I personally don't like them, but they can be good.
They can be good, but they're so much harder to be good.
They're harder to be.
They're generally not good, and that spot has never been good.
Joel?
They don't pick the person because they're the best person for the job. They pick the person because they're the best person aesthetically for the job.
Right.
That's a big problem.
It's Coachman, but I agree with what Mo said. Like, there's no, I'm not disagreeing at all. I think that it's just one of the other many symptoms that are rotting WWE from the inside.
Okay, really quickly, before we get out of here, some bold predictions for 2019. I'm just going to ask you some really quick questions and just give me the yes or no answers to this, and then we'll get out of here. Next year, 2019, we'll start with Mo. Will Conor McGregor be in a WWE ring at any point? Not wrestling, not necessarily wrestling, but will he ever be in a WWE ring at any point in 2019?
Not in 2019, though he will be someday.
Joel?
No.
Start with this one with Joel. Will Dave Bautista wrestle in the WWE next year? Joel?
No.
Mo?
Yes.
Okay. Mo, will Rob Van Dam wrestle in the WWE in 2019?
No.
Joel?
Nope.
Mo, will AEW be around at the end of 2019?
Yes.
Joel?
Yes.
Okay. Will CM Punk wrestle for any promotion next year? Mo?
No.
Joel?
Nope.
And then finally, will The Rock wrestle at any point this year, Mo?
No.
Joel?
Yes.
Because you want to see it. Because you want to see it. Because you're going to WrestleMania.
And I guess the last one is, with the recent news about his neck, do either of you see Stone Cold Steve Austin wrestle for the blood money?
No.
Joel?
No, I hope not.
And I guess my final one, do either of you see Shawn Michaels at WrestleMania?
No.
Yeah. Give me it all. I want to see it all.
All right, so there you go. It was it's one of my favorite shows to do of the year. Really fun show, as always. Yes, Joel?
I know we said we're going to get out of here, but I have something I want to ask you guys, too.
Sure.
Go ahead, Joel. Do you have something first?
I wanted to see if there's anyone that anyone should be keeping their eyes on in 2019. Someone that we didn't talk.
That's pretty much what I was going to say. I was going to ask you, specifically I was going to say, who's the guy who you think is 1 or 2 years away from unlocking it? Much like we could see Adam Page or Hangman Page 2 years ago, you could see it coming, but we wasn't sure if it would be a year or 2 years, and this year he's emerged as a top 20 guy in the world.
Like, so not a big name, but a name
up. That guy that you're like, oh, nobody's paying attention to, but they should, because in a year or two, he's going to be a big somebody people are really talking about.
I really like Shane Strickland. I think that could be one of the guys.
A pick.
Mine is in Ring of Honor, and his name's Jonathan Gresham. Yeah, I think he could be a guy that he's been very impressive from what I've seen.
He'd be my pick. He was my pick for best technical wrestler the last couple of years. He's been awesome.
I think he could break through and definitely be a big time player.
If you're looking at a guy right now that I think is a decent name that can just propel, there's two names that come to mind in the next year. It's Ospreay and Ricochet.
Oh yeah, well absolutely. But those aren't people off the radar.
No. Yeah, I'm looking for
people a little bit more off the radar, and that's why my pick for this. And so these are two names I want you to keep in mind. It might not be this year. It might be the following year, but they're getting close. You can see it. You can see the progression. Number one is Finley's kid. What's his name? David Finley.
David Finley, yeah.
David Finley's improvement is there, and he's in much better shape than he was, partly because he's been working out with Juice, and he's getting more colorful. He's developing his personality. His in-ring work is getting crisper and more athletic. So he's getting close. The other guy, even more off the radar, that I really want you guys to pay attention to, is TK O'Ryan. He's young. He came into Ring of Honor, suffered a horrible injury when he did a moonsault and landed and cracked his leg a couple of years ago. But he's very young, and at the time he was really skinny. Now you realize that this guy's like 6'4". And muscling up, and he is starting to, his talking is getting better. He's starting to interact with the crowd better and getting it to understanding how to work a crowd and elicit a reaction. He's just got to add 2 to 3 distinctive offensive moves that are all his own, and he's going to be right there. So that's a name that WWE is going to want in a year or two. I'm sure of it.
One name I never brought up for best comeback that I should have brought up was Teddy Hart. Great year from Teddy.
Yeah, but he's Teddy Hart.
I know. I guess, weirdly enough, I kind of root for him, despite the craziness that he is.
I know, but yes, if you want to give an award for best comeback from a jackass.
Wanting Taz to do run-ins. Brian Pillman Jr., by the way, is a name that should be on there as well, Mo.
Yeah, that's a great one, yeah.
Yeah. Just quickly, there. I have a couple yes or no's that I wanted to ask as well. First one is, does Fox regret getting WWE after after a few months?
How long do you guys give it before it's moved to FS1 was maybe the best question. I give it, I'll say 6 months.
It's interesting just because of what content is right now, and content is such king as far as live shows. Joel was telling me they're looking for a 3. So if it jumps to that 3, yeah, I wouldn't be shocked if it moves to FS1. But that Friday spot is interesting on a Friday. That's kind of where you put shows that you don't fully believe on.
But the thing is, they're already doing a 3. So yeah. They're looking for 3.5. That's the whole point. And I love people like Dave Meltzer, not a futurist. That's his problem. Knows wrestling, but I think he's getting a little out of touch because he's like, well, they're in 25% home, so they're doing 2 million, so they're going to go to 2.5. I'm like, yeah, but that 25% doesn't have the same percentage of hardcore wrestling fans as the 75% that can access it now. So maybe you're going to go up 10%, not 25%, because those people aren't already hardcore wrestling fans. So you can't just look at it and go 25% more, they'll add 25. No, they won't. They're going to go nowhere near that.
The company has a star problem too, Mo. I would say AJ's a star to casual fans at this point. And maybe Becky's getting there. Maybe Brian's there. But without Roman, and I doubt Roman will be back by that point next year, they really have a star problem, and that's going to definitely hurt them from being long-term with Fox as well. Unless they just
stars. The biggest stars are the big fans. Don't worry.
All right. John, what's next?
Who's going to be Here's the first one. Will Turner get back into wrestling? Because that's a rumor. Will they get back into wrestling in 2019?
That's the rumor. Ariel Helwani reported, I think it was one championship MMA, signed a deal, and Turner is now in to get boxing and to get wrestling on top of MMA. So, I think Turner's going to be pretty aggressive next year and trying to get wrestling back on. Who it is? Could it be AEW? Could it be someone like an MLW that we didn't really know about last year that came up? Who knows?
I think that ship has sailed. I think no.
No?
They might kick the tires, but I don't think that is going to happen.
Final one. Who is going to be in All Elite Wrestling?
Oh, shit.
That's the million-dollar question, because everyone's getting signed up.
Well, maybe, I mean, there's so many, but, and like you say, they're offering better contracts than everybody was expecting. Maybe let's put it this way. Who's the most likely that's a big star that people don't think is going to go there, but actually might go there? Like, for instance, I think that, I really think the Revival is a really good chance to go there, but I mean big star. I think Kevin Owens, since Young Bucks are like his best friends.
And he's got a five-year contract, though.
Does he?
Yeah.
Are you sure?
Yes, he just signed it in June.
I don't know.
I'm just calling my shot. They're going to get
CM Maybe Punk. He won't be this year, but I still see it happening someday.
I'm just going to call my shot. CM Punk's going to be in AEW by the end of the year. Bold prediction. Going to call with it right now. CM Punk obviously doesn't have much with MMA. He's doing some commentary stuff, and so we'll see how that goes. And he's doing a few hosting gigs. But I think he hears some of these interviews. There's a slight sense of the itch still there to him. I think CM Punk is in AEW by the end of the year.
That'd be awesome. Let me tell you, I'd love CM Punk versus Omega. And Omega is the big question. Of all of them, we know what they're doing except for Omega, right?
Yeah.
But boy, man, Omega and Punk, wouldn't that be friggin' fantastic?
Yeah, Omega's the question, because there's a lot of matches for him in WWE. And...
Well, he's not going to WWE. That's done.
Oh, but there's
either AEW, Japan, that's it. New Japan or AEW. That's the question.
Yeah, it's going to be 2019 is an interesting year, because much like we talked about in 2017 for what the future is, and we said the rise of independent wrestling, it's a whole different ballgame right now. The indies are kind of a territory system right now in some ways.
There's a few similarities. By the way, I do believe Omega, because they said in All Elite, let's go change the world, and that's always been his saying. I believe he's going to AEW.
Yeah. What the future of AEW is in 2019 is the biggest question.
And WWE has no hope.
Yeah, it's going to be...
I can tell you super quick, explain why. On this Raw last night. So they have, they talk about new matchups and bring up fresh people and we're listening to the fans. Okay, so none of that matters if you don't understand what you're doing. So I'm just going to give you an example of why they cannot turn it around, because they don't understand what they're doing. So they have a match between McIntyre and Finn Balor. Ziggler interferes with the pay-per-view, leads to a match between Finn and Ziggler, because Ziggler wants him to know he's not his pal. So they're having a match. They go on for 9 minutes. They have a commercial break in between, blah, blah, blah. At the end of the match, it ends because McIntyre comes in, clotheslines I think he clotheslined Ziggler first, if I remember correctly. Or did he clothesline the other guy first? I think it was Ziggler first, wasn't it? Balor won by DQ, I think. So it must have clotheslined Balor first.
Balor did a win. Oh, yesterday?
Yes.
Yeah, I can't remember. That's how forgettable that show was.
So he clotheslines Balor, and then he turns. Yes, that's right. He clotheslined Balor. Then he turned on Ziggler and beats the shit out of Ziggler. So you have three guys, two heels and one babyface. The one heel it attacks the babyface and the heel. So he doesn't get any baby or any heel heat, because he's attacked a heel and a baby face. So he's getting no heel heat. The other heel gets beat up equal with the baby face, but it's not a baby face turn. So he doesn't turn baby face, nor does he get any baby face heat any heel heat, because he's getting beat on. And the baby face doesn't get the baby face heat, because the heel is also getting beat up by the other heel. So he doesn't get any benefit out of this. So it's just something that happens. Now, if you come to the ring and you put in the two of them are having a match, let's say, and it starts off with Finn Balor just beating the hell out of him. Ziggler does something heelish, rakes the eyes, whatever it is. Nobody ever does anything heelish, WWE, in the ring. But they should, because the characterization and storytelling in the ring is just as important, and after the match, just as important as the entrance and the promos and everything else, but they don't. But it should be, Finn Balor's beating the hell out of him. He does something heelish to get control. He has control for a while, and then Finn is coming back and kicking the hell out of him at the end, and he's just surviving. He's getting his feet on the ropes. He's just surviving. He's barely surviving Balor, because he's the heel. And Ziggler's just, getting his ass kicked at the end. When McIntyre shows up, McIntyre gets in the ring, Balor's distracted. Ziggler pushes the Balor into it. The two of them, he knocks him down. The two of them look at him together. They're both heels. They beat the shit out of the babyface. They both beat the shit out of the babyface now. Okay, now the babyface is getting all this. Both the heels are getting heat now. And your babyface is getting sympathy. They go instead now. They roll him out of the ring. McIntyre follows him out of the ring, continues to beat the hell out of him. Ziggler goes to the ring ropes. Ziggler's playing it up to the crowd. See, we're back together. It was a swerve all along. See, he still likes me. See, it was never as bad as you thought it was. He thinks it is. While he's playing to the crowd and McIntyre's laying the boots to him, McIntyre looks back in the ring, rolls in the ring. He's going to beat the hell out. Now he's going to Claymore kick this guy because he actually does hate him. He goes to Claymore kick him. Ziggler drops down, avoids it, runs out into the crowd. McIntyre chases after him, doesn't get him. Ziggler runs away. He's a heel. He's a chicken shit heel showing his ass. He's getting heel heat for doing that. McIntyre now gets back into around the ring. He beats the shit out of, continues to beat the shit out, takes the chair, continues to beat the shit out of Balor because he's frustrated he couldn't get his hands on Ziggler. McIntyre is your bully heel getting heel heat. Ziggler is a different character heel getting heel heat. Your babyface had to have two guys beat him up after almost winning a match, and now he's getting attacked by two men, and then afterwards continue to get beat on and with a chair. He's getting babyface reaction and babyface sympathy. This is the psychology of wrestling storytelling, the psychology of man, the psychology of any storytelling. This is all of it. It doesn't matter who you bring up, who you put in the ring, who you do anything with. If you don't understand how to get people over and how to tell a storyline, you will never turn the product around. You're welcome.
And with that, I thank everyone for listening to our year in review show.
No comments to that, guys? No comments?
I think you just mastered it, dude. Plus, I'm going to let you eat.
Yeah, that's true. I want to eat.
Thank you, everyone, for listening to the year in review show. We have a bunch of other year in review shows coming up on Fresh Take, including a sports year in review show where I got to swallow my pride on a few things, entertainment year in review thing, and we also have a video game year in review all coming up on the Fresh Take Network that you can all find here on We Talk Podcast. Some great Christmas episodes on Fresh Take, and Kung great Fu job Boogaloo. By Mo and everyone that they did for Kung Fu Boogaloo.
Kung Fu Boogaloo is having a Boogaloo award show. The most Boogaloo moments and everything, which is the most crazy movie moments from these B movies that we watch and award, including what movie will be a future Boogaloo star from 2018. So I want to shout out to that.
Great stuff on there. We Talk and Joel. Good stuff with Stick Boy. Anything exciting coming out to finish up the year?
No, I think this is the last one for the year. It's busy time for us, so we're all
fantastic. Good. So make sure you check everything out from the past for Stick Boy with all the great stuff that Joel has. Like I said, we have the video game reviews coming for Fresh Take. Go back and check out his review of PS4 Spider-Man and make sure everything on Fresh Take. We Talk Podcast. It's been a fantastic year. You guys have a great one. Until next time, cheers and enjoy the shows, people.